There's a danger that we will always tend to domesticate God and Jesus right along with God. We come by it honestly, by the limits of our understanding, by the effort we make to manage our knowledge in this world, our love of convenient facts that can bring things down to something we can manage and comprehend. But when we do, we lose something far more important than what we gain. We lose the mysterious nature of things. This mysterious nature, like being swept up in something like love. Not manageable love, but love which undoes us by its sheer purity. Like that unexpected moment when a child is passing you by and just puts an arm around your leg and lets you know that you're loved. And leaves you to notice also that it leaves behind a challenge. And the challenge is to be more loving. Tonight we gather in what is truly a rather domestic scene. It's a Passover meal shared, a tradition kept that Jesus and his disciples did as so many other Jews were doing and had done for centuries. Into it comes this strange washing of feet, and then the reinterpretation of the bread and wine, the usual symbols of the Passover gratitude, offered as a sign of God's historic faithfulness to Jesus' early ancestors. But here, called his body and blood. The meaning of this night does not stand alone. It will find its root meaning tomorrow in what we call Good Friday. And Good Friday is something we struggle to make sense of actually in the light of Christ rising on Easter. But it is a rite tonight that prepares us for what is unknowable in the moment or was for them so long ago. Much like the first Passover prepared the ancient Jews for the unseen, unknowable journey through the wilderness that was to be theirs, a 40-year-long journey toward a land that they were promised. They traveled hoping to arrive in a place that would be theirs, struggling to keep believing that God had their care housed in God's very being. As they journeyed and when they arrived, they began this custom of keeping Passover, a feast remembering the intimacy of God's reach, making them a choice people. But not just remembering it, but calling it into that moment with them that they might re-experience it. A once enslaved people, now God's people. And so it was long ago that Jesus gathered with his intimate friends to remember what it is to be a choice people, to call it into their very presence. Little did they know that he was preparing them for what would be unknowable. He broke the bread. He blessed the cup. He called it my body, my blood. When he held their feet, he washed them. They had no idea what was ahead of them. They knew Jesus to be wise, to be a healing presence that showed up both in the way that he spoke of God's love and in his touch with people in their moments of need. At least this much showed them that God was in Jesus in a deep way, maybe a messianic way. But on that fateful Friday, they would witness something that would come to have profound meaning. So constant was Jesus in God's love that in him, God would rather die than kill. Sheathe thy sword is a phrase you will hear tomorrow. Would rather suffer than prove inconsistent in loving us to the end of his life, even though Jesus will rise again. Looking back, the cross is where God absorbs sin and returns it as forgiveness. How does Jesus choose to prepare us in the way he prepared those first disciples? He assumes a servant's role. He strips to his basic clothing, kneels, washes their feet, will accept no refusal, and then tells them, "You call me teacher and Lord, and that is right, for that is what I am. But if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash one another's feet. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Just as I have loved you, so you should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." If we know nothing else about God, this much we must hold as true: that we are, each and every one of us, God's beloved. Whatever we think may alienate us from God in any moment in time, this is God's promise: to absorb that moment of alienation, to absorb what we might call sin, and to return it to us as forgiveness. And the core gratitude that we are to offer is to show that kind of love one to another, so that every time we bless the cup or break the bread, we do so to be called home to Christ's love, which is God's love. It is to strengthen us to serve that love in the world, often in less dramatic ways, more humble ways, very akin to washing feet. I don't know about you, but I seldom have washed feet except in the Maundy-Thursday liturgy. When I see this, I recall that the closest I've come to this is changing diapers. Many of us have done that. It's not overly noble. It's a needful drudgery at times. It's a necessity. When my daughter was newborn and growing older, a cry meant feed me, or change me, or hold me, or some mystery I couldn't figure out. You get to the place where you almost do changing of diapers on automatic pilot. You almost change the diaper without noticing that there's a person with the diaper on. It's a task. And then there are those strange, heart-intimate moments when you're cleansing that pudgy flesh, you notice its vulnerability, the beauty of the skin, the delight of parental love washes over you. You are the protective servant of this wonderful gift of life. You know that you would do in that moment almost anything to protect and to love her into her full person. You sometimes even tear at the thought. Little did I know that that was preparing me for the unknowable and the unforeseen. For diapers reappeared in my life in my father's final days. I had not planned on this. Ours was a complex relationship woven of mystery, of rejection, of acceptances, of learning to forgive enough to occupy the same space, all kinds of vulnerabilities. And then in time, he was dying. All the unreconciled parts were silently there. All the history of reluctant forgiveness and memories was there. Of what it is to know that beneath it all, you actually were the one that he provided for all those years. In it was also a memory of my mother as she cared for her mother dying similarly, of parishioners who I had seen care for loved ones in the same way, of friends who'd done the same. And then the person slowly begins to fade away, strength going, only the needs remaining. Diapers now need changing. Two sons roll a body this way and that way to tend to his needs. And this was all the forgiveness we could ever offer for whatever we held unforgiven, and all the love that remained in that very simple act. Jesus said, "Do as I have done for you." He tells us to tend each other, to forgive one another. "A new commandment I give you, love just as I have loved you." That's big. That's complex. That's so very simple. And it's all woven together. It's bagging up and giving away old shoes. It's making a meal for the friend or neighbor. It's seeing your righteous anger and letting it go. It's working to turn a wound into a wisdom learned. It's caring enough to see each other as vulnerable works of God. Like Jesus, turning sin or hurt into forgiveness. It's opening your hands to communion when you feel unworthy and when you feel hopeful. All these things weave us into the child of God that we are, all this loving. In it is the mystery that you and I and people through all time have been part of the flow of the love of Jesus Christ, nurtured at this altar and then found in service given out. Little did they know that he was preparing them for the unseen, the unknowable depth of God's love. Little at times do we know as well. Yet Jesus' last actions in the community that becomes this community centuries later was to touch, to wash, to feed, and to promise that he is always in it all.